FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and the date is February 28th, 2018. Last day of the short month, for sure, but the action goes on, life happens, and everything, life goes on. Well, person you're about to hear from, remarkable story, a story of going and willing to put your life on the line for your country. I don't know how many of out there of you would be doing the same. I'm sure there's a lot of you. I'll give a heads up, a shout out to my favorite NYPD officer in the Bronx, New York. I know you're one of them. And it's about putting your life on the line. It's about believing in a cause greater than yourself and willing to carry out your mission regardless. And the person I'm talking about is Major Scott A. Husing. Scott, your former Marines, former Major, you led Echo Group, Echo Company in Ramadi, in Iraq, at 250 men under your command. And if that doesn't keep you up at night, I don't know what does. From 2006 to 2007, you fought daily and, you know, You really did something that amazes and you should be proud of. So with that, hey, by the way, before we start, anybody wants to participate in the show, just email me at kl@kerrylutz.com. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on the program, Kerry. It's my pleasure.
So you've got a really interesting story. You know, you wound up a major in the Marines, you know, leading this troop against a faceless enemy. Like you said, anyone, you didn't know who the enemy was. You didn't know what the enemy looked like. They weren't wearing uniforms. You couldn't tell who to kill, who or not to kill. And that one fraction of a second of hesitation could be your undoing. And you came back, you had PTSD. It took you a while to overcome it. And now you've started a nonprofit called Save the Brave. So we all owe you a debt of gratitude.
Well, I'm grateful to be on the program because I think it's important that, you know, there's so many programs like yours that are willing to do vets to share their stories. And, you know, obviously my career in the Marine Corps was long. You know, I started off just like most guys as a young high school graduate without college prospects on the horizon. And I'd led a pretty risky lifestyle growing up, riding a motorcycle and running from the cops and fighting and things like that. So the Marines were a natural fit for me. They're a big group of risk takers and I fit right in. So after that, and learning the error of my ways, I went to college and did well. I graduated in 3 years. And I say that because it's a tribute to the discipline that I learned as a young Marine. And afterwards, I got my commission as an infantry officer and was very privileged to, you know, lead and serve with some of the finest Marines I've ever known. And a lot of times I get asked that question, you know, like, why was this story important for you to tell over a 24-year career? And I suppose just like you have those moments, those pinnacles of your career that are very impactful. And the Second Battle of Ramadi in 2006 was one of those for me. And, it's very important that we don't let great stories like this become marginalized in the mainstream media as they often do and have. And I think that by sharing this story, we're reinforcing that. And it's not just another war story, Kerry. It's obviously about the fighting, the friction and the pain and sometimes laughter of it all under the worst conditions. But it's also about the people. It's about the emotion and it's about that raw feeling, not just of the Marines that fought and the soldiers that fought alongside of us, but also those families that supported us while we fought and the families, our Gold Star families that continue to support us to this day, who are just this group of extraordinary people that I write about in Echo and Ramadi.
Yeah. So you started out, you were kind of, sounds like you had no purpose. You didn't know what you were doing. How'd you wind up signing up for the Marine Corps?
Again, I was introduced by a guy who had enlisted as well. He introduced me to him. And at the time, you know, as a young 18, 19 year old kid, I didn't know anything about the Marine Corps. All I saw was the cool looking uniforms. They were bigger than life. They have a great recruitment process, and it just seemed like a natural fit to me. You know, 24 years later, I look back at my career, either being a Marine or having the distinct privilege to lead Marines has been something that I've never regretted one step of the way. And, you know, through it all, through the good times and the bad, and the dangerous ones, and the all the deployments, it's really been a remarkable experience, because the Marine Corps breeds a unique character, as most people see. And, you know, it's portrayed in movies, but we do have a very unique brotherhood. And Echo Company, 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines, was no different. You know, and I always tell people tuning into programs and also that read the book, and I start off with the book to let people know that I never presupposed that my Marines, that Echo Company, were the group of Marines to ever walk the face of the battlefield. We weren't, you know, some specially trained group. We were so closely knit, and we had such remarkable chemistry. And I think that was an integral part of our battlefield. And that chemistry that we had that enabled us to fight and survive in the deadly city of Ramadi, as we fought a well-trained insurgent force, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day during battles that lasted up to 5 hours. You know, that chemistry is what allowed us to bring as many Marines home with us alive as we did. And to this day, that chemistry, that power of human connection, really sustains us. It really keeps us connected. So those guys that are out there that you know, need to connect and deal with some of the issues that they're dealing with, they have a resource. You know, they have this amazing network.
Yeah.
The Marine Corps, you never feel like it's going to get any bigger or tighter than when you're on active duty. But I always tell listeners and veterans that once you leave active duty, if you open yourself up, if you reach out and join these groups and become a part of these organizations or charity, and you become involved, that network is so much bigger. And
yeah,
that's what I attribute the success of Echo and Ramadi to, from its inception, through editing, through getting it sold, and this amazing launch week that we've gone on through, launching the book on Fox News last week and being on Sirius XM and all these radio shows, you know, just shot it right up at, you know, to an instant bestseller. And it's been just an amazing journey to have that type of support, not only through our Marine network, but all of our fans, friends, and family. Has been really been humbling for me.
Yeah, and I should point out, your book just got released last week, Echo in Ramadi, the firsthand story of U.S. Marines in Iraq's deadliest city. So I'm going to ask you, Scott, you know, we have Marines alive, but still a few from World War II, from Korea, from Vietnam. Are these, and even from the first Gulf War, do you think your experience, how does it compare? And I don't mean heroic or whatever. Do you think the experience of a Marine in battle is kind of universal?
Absolutely. It's not a cliche that war is timeless. I think that the conditions and the generation of war, it's absolutely timeless. And as I write in Echo and Ramadi, I say that combat is not a natural event. It's just not. Humans create war, and the Marines and soldiers that have to fight them and experience some of the worst things that humanity has to offer, and to have to perform some of the most amazing and life-changing events in the face of great danger. Those are timeless, and that's not only validated from what we experience, but my good fortune to know so many Vietnam veterans as the president of the 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines Association, World War II veterans, Korean War veterans, all of them, we share those same similarities, because in every war, there's pain. In every war, there's laughter. In every war, there's friction that I describe in granular detail in Echo and Ramadi. And we've all experienced that to some level, but under different circumstances. And the generation that's fighting today, I think, have a different understanding of where they're fighting because of the training they receive. They have absolutely the best weaponry. They have the best training, but they also have a really unique understanding of the culture of the environment they're fighting in. And we got a lot of that cultural training before we went to Iraq. They get a lot of that before they go to Afghanistan. So I think that's something when I talk to my Vietnam vets, when I talk to World War II vets, you know, that type of training was relatively absent. And that was just a product of how they trained their guys and how the soldiers were. We had the citizen soldiers that, you know, was an all volunteer force. And then we had the draft in Vietnam. So they didn't have those unique opportunities that our all volunteer force today has. So that's something that's really changed, but it's also improved how our military fights in the current environment with the current threat and how we fought, you know, 10 years ago in an asymmetric war on an urban battlefield where the front line was literally everywhere. You know, we literally lived in the city, Gary. We lived amongst the people, and we fought, as you said, a faceless, ununiformed enemy that blended in with the local population very well. And that's a challenge, not only as a commander, but as a young Marine. You know, when I wrote Echo in Ramadi, it probably took going through the interviews and writing through it and a little bit of age and wisdom, as you know, as you get a little older to understand. When I look back, I didn't see, you know, these young kids. I saw Sergeant Lutz or I saw Corporal Lutz. I didn't see a 20-year-old kid. And I was very fortunate at the time, too, to have about 50 veterans from the first Battle of Ramadi in 2004. And now they were these seasoned, salty sergeants, you know, and corporals, all of now 21, 22 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the type of people we have serving. And those are the type of guys that I led in combat, over 250 Marines and soldiers and sailors. And every time I task them to do these superhuman feats in the face of such chaos every single day, they never let me down. And those guys took care of each other better than anything I'd ever known. And they sure as heck took care of me, because I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for my guys. And they're just a remarkable group of warriors.
So it's often said Marines don't fight for their country. They don't fight for the Marine Corps. They fight for their brothers in arms who are there fighting with them. Is that really true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the Marines always put the mission first. And in 2006 and 2007, as part of the surge strategy ordered by President George W. Bush and General David Petraeus, our mission at the time was kill or capture anti-Iraqi forces. And that's what the Marines did. We didn't fight policies. We didn't fight politics. We didn't fight strategy. We fought the enemy. That was our main mission, to kill or capture Iraqi forces. And each and every day, from street to street, from house to house, from room to room, my Marines were getting at it, knocking the enemy on their heels every single day with this combat hunter mentality, with this relentless pursuit to attack those that wanted to stand up against. And in 2006, that's what was happening, which could be compared to maybe a historical example in Vietnam, where the Tet Offensive, where we had these two massive armies that were surging to really quell this insurgent behavior that was going on. And throughout those years, from 2004, 5, and 6, it was this giant game of whack-a-mole, where these insurgent pockets would pop up and we'd hammer them back down to the ground in cities like Fallujah, cities like Baghdad, Najaf, Tikrit, all great battles. And then we came back in 2006 to Ramadi, and we had our task at hand, and the 50 salty seasoned veterans that fought with me and Echo Company again even remarked how bad the city had become because we gave it back to the Iraqis. And to this day, I like to always find those that fought in all those battles across Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere that we won, you know. And if it's a matter of looking at the scoreboard on how many bad guys you killed, that's one way to measure success. But my metric of real success was always the fact that we brought as many Marines home alive with us as possible. And that's something I attribute to the leadership and discipline of the guys that fought, not only with lethality on a daily basis as they continue to crush the enemy, but they did it with honor, Kerry, and they left that battlefield knowing that they did their job and that they helped so many people that really just couldn't help themselves. And that's the true spirit of what Marines do.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you got to be proud of that. And, you know, I think the key is no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are, no matter what the circumstances, you always have to do your best, because at least you know you did your best. You really can't have any regrets because you did your best.
Marines are known for their I say that because I'm a little bit jaded, but they never let me down. But, you know, we were also extremely fortunate to be fighting alongside our Army brothers under the 1st Brigade Combat Team in several task force within the city of Ramadi. And I say that it's very important to me to give them recognition and credit. And there were other Marine units in that city as we fought through the bloody streets of Ramadi, because our Army brothers were there well before we showed up in the winter of 06. And the few months that we spent there, I look back on it and I think it was just a dent compared to what the Army spent there, because they were there another 8-9 months after we left. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we were there and they wielded us around like this blunt instrument of war, as one of my commanders referred to me and my Marines as, really made an impact in the city. That's what the infusion of the Marines did for that city, for that battle, was Echo Company and my fellow company, Fox Company, which was commanded by a good friend of mine, John Smith. You know, we were tools that the Army leveraged to really open up pockets of resistance that they had encountered, so they could go in and really drive the enemy to ground and drive them back out and just destroy them in every aspect, from their ideology, from the threats and intimidation of the local people. That's what the Marines did. And we operated under slightly different tactics, techniques, and procedures. And maybe our methods were a little bit unconventional, but that's what we needed to win. That's what we needed to survive in that type of environment. And those soldiers that fought alongside of us get equal credit, because, again, you know, there's plenty of other units that fought as hard, if not harder, and bled as much, if not more, than we did. And all of their service and all their sacrifice matters to me and should absolutely matter to everyone of your listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, again, thank you for your service. Thank you for this book. The book, I think, is really meaningful, Scott, and really happy that you contributed it. If you're interested in the book, it's Echo in Ramadi, the firsthand story of U.S. Marines in Iraq's deadliest city. It just came out last week. You find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and I guess wherever fine books used to be sold. And Scott, thank you so much for telling your story. Everybody's Costco got down. A story.
Absolutely.
All right.
Well, thanks again, Kerry, I want to say thanks again, and also remind listeners, Kerry, that a portion of the proceeds do go to SaveTheBrave.org to help veterans with post-traumatic stress, something I'm very committed to. As the executive director of that organization, that's really what makes me happy, is taking care of vets at the beginning and the end of every day. So thanks so much, and Semper Fi.
All right. Semper Fi. Thanks there, Scott. Be well. Hey, and got any questions for Scott, myself? Send us an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. Scott, be well.
Thanks, Gary.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.